from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
That one hit well to left. Welcome to Houston, Trey Mancini.
Yeah, there it is. We've fallen in love with Trey Mancini in the city already. It's a me. It's a Trey Mancini. He's already won over the Houston Astros fan base. Like, you trade for him.
You know the last time, though, where we have to be careful with this?
What's that?
The last time that this theme and this love this quickly came about with the Houston Astros, Joe Biagini.
Everybody loved how outspoken
he was, and this was the guy that could help the bullpen.
Come on.
He got lit up like a bonfire about two appearances in, and everybody was like, yeah, this guy sucks.
No one thought Joe Biagini was going to be a huge factor.
Not a huge factor, but they thought, hey, he could help. He's funny guy.
Mancini homering in the game yesterday. It was Kevin Eschenfelder on AT&T Sportsnet. First at bat as a starter. So, of course, we love the Trey Mancini. But, like, can you assure Carlos Beltran whenever you traded for him, immediate impact? Randy Johnson when you traded for him, immediate impact? Justin Verlander when you traded for him, immediate impact? And we're not comparing Trey Mancini to those other three. Beltran would have a tear the rest of the regular season, the playoffs. Randy Johnson was the best pitcher in baseball post-trade deadline. And Justin Verlander led the Astros to the World Series. But you talk, like, we were having the discussion yesterday, pass, fail. I know the wheelhouse were having, like, the letter grade conversation. And a lot of people were thinking, oh, well, the Astros, they went shopping at a bargain, right? They didn't end up with Josh Bell. They didn't end up with the biggest name. They got moved Juan Soto. Luis Castillo went to Seattle. You finish with Trey Mancini. And Trey Mancini, you look at the numbers, and they're good, but they're not Josh Bell, where he's top five in the National League in key offensive categories. You don't really look at the Camden Yard park factors and things like that. So you can kind of underrate Trey Mancini. He's not sexy, right? You know the story. It's a great story. He's a good offensive player, not a great offensive player. So, like, not that anybody had angst towards Mancini, but there were some that were disappointed that it was Mancini, the best player that you got.
Instead of Josh Bell. Everybody had focused on a tier, and unless you listen to us, because you know my tier was, thanks to your starting the process, my tier started with Trey Mancini. And I think that when people didn't get either that sexy name, the biggest splash, one of the three biggest splashes out there, if you include Hader with Soto and some of the guys that were traded, and then you look at it and say, okay, he wasn't the biggest splash, but let's get the best name that we've heard out there for this team and the right fit. They didn't get that guy either. And that's where we talked about yesterday, that's where people started saying it was a fail.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. But if you follow this guy at all, if you follow baseball at all, and you know his story, it's one thing. But just from the press conferences after each guy got one at bat in the ninth inning of their first game, or when they prior to the game when they talked, Vasquez, it was easy to understand why people weren't jumping on real quick, because he wasn't excited, and we talked about the reasons why, because he might not get the same playing time he got in Boston.
Yeah.
But with Mancini, every single quote was centered around, I'll worry about Baltimore later, and I love that place, but I'm so excited to be in this position with this team. I've admired this team. It's so cool. And then you see the way everybody has taken to him, too, and to do what he did yesterday. Yeah. How can you not love this guy?
I went and had a big Italian sandwich from Potbelly on my way in today because I was just so happy that Trey Mancini, you know Trey Mancini's uncle owns a pasta company, by the way, or some pepper Italian company. Yeah, we love the Trey Mancini. I'm going to start Pat McAfee. I learned this because I was listening to him interview Nick Caseri, who is another fellow Italian. I think that I'm also a little bit of Italian now by proximity because I loved Trey Mancini. But I'm going to start wearing my ring on my pinky like Italians do and do this just throughout the entire show. I think that's the way to do it, right? That's what we should be doing because we love Trey Mancini. Here was Mancini with Morales after the game because you alluded to some of that stuff, the excitement that he had to be with the Astros, the moment where Jose Altuve just looking at him with these eyes like he just met his, you know,
His new best friend.
His new best friend. We won't say lover.
Mm-hmm.
We won't say the, you know, what's that?
He only loves Justin Verlander.
Like he literally loves Justin Verlander. Yeah, it wasn't his, the word's escaping me. But anyways, here's Trey Mancini with our friend, Julian Morales, after the game.
It was really special. You know, I just wanted to go out there and contribute to a win. That was the goal today. So, yeah, it was a really special moment, and I just have felt so welcome here, and it was just a really fun game today. I just saw a couple guys getting excited, so I, you know, just kind of pointed at them, and I was pretty pumped up in the moment. So, like I said, just a really, you know, special moment, and definitely one of the highlights of my career. They've been absolutely amazing. You know, so kind to me. Everybody, you know, has told me that they're excited I'm here, and yeah, it just really makes me feel so welcome.
Trey Mancini after the game, also he echoed those same things with Julian Morales. He was just pumped up. He was excited. He loves being a Houston Astro. And you know one other thing that he loves? He loves the Crawford boxes. You mentioned this on the air yesterday when we were pretending, wink, wink, that the game started at 3:05. But we knew full well that the game was going on now because we were watching the game yesterday as it happened. And we celebrated the Trey Mancini home run. this is hilarious. 30 major league ballparks in baseball. Trey Mancini, when that ball came off the bat yesterday, we were watching it live. Wink, wink. We knew it was a no-doubter, right? And yep. Brendan even told us, no-doubter. And then you see some of the tweets come out, and the only ballpark that would not have been a home run at in all of Major League Baseball was Camden Yards.
And this is what we've been stressing to you as to why, just another reason why he would be a great fit for this team in this city in that ballpark, is because he played in cavernous Camden Yards, where his 8 bombs might have been an overachievement based on the fact that that place is such a joke to hit home runs out of. And you know, you being the resident numbers guy, we're quick to look it up and bring up the fact that if he had played his games in Minute Maid Park, he'd be in the 20s. So, ironically, and obviously, ideally for Astros fans, all in his first home run at Minute Maid Park, it's crazy that the only ballpark it wouldn't have got out of mm-hmm. is the park that he has played in for years and years. And it just seems like it was just ironic and the perfect fit at the perfect time, and I look forward to him being in that lineup, damn it, every single time he gets a chance. Dusty.
It's a good point. It's a good point that you bring up there. But it was cool to see that. Cool to see him have that moment. Cool to see one. Okay, so like that gives him something that, you know, a home run. Okay, fans are excited, pumped up that this is your trade deadline acquisition. But then also to have like all the comments that he was talking about after the game too is cool to see. Like, so excited to be here. I'm so happy to have this opportunity. He even said to Morales right after the game, even before they went to the clubhouse, he said, "This is the best baseball moment of my life." Like, that is great. That is awesome to hear. And you didn't really catch a whole lot of that of Christian Vasquez at first, but we saw him yesterday. He got some playing time, and you know, he looked at Will Smith like he was the love of his life. So it's cool. It's cool to see that the new players.
I think here's the other factor, too, as we were discussing this as the trade went down. They have such a special relationship in that locker room, and it's such a family atmosphere. The fact that you see these guys going out of their way to be, like, on Team Trey, and like really celebrate with him over his first home run, really welcome him in. You know what they already had found out before they made this deal. This is a dude that they like, that they want to be a part of this squad. This also can help you in the future too, because now whether that option's picked up or not, he might be a nice piece for you when Brantley leaves to be a guy that stays here and continues to play here. And if he likes it here and he really feels comfortable here, that's a win-win for the Astros.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably an off-season conversation, yep. But I would and look, he might even be like, "Hey guys, I have a $10 million contract next year. Like, yeah, I'd probably make more on the open market, but maybe we think about just picking up this option. It's in play." I would say it's unlikely.
Or give me a couple extra. We'll make it a win-win situation, and I'll sign on for 2 or 3.
Look, I would love to have him back. You mentioned the left field option as a spot for him for the
future.
First base, too. Because Yuli's contract is up, and then Brantley's contract is up, too. So the Astros will be in the market for a left fielder, for a first baseman, regardless. Even if it's Brantley that they're talking to for left, even if it's Yuli they're talking to for first, they don't have a left fielder or a first baseman currently on this roster. One in Fuentes on Twitch says that in honor, I don't even know how to say these words, in honor of Trey Mancini, I will be making a sandwich with gabagooey.
No clue.
And prosciutto? I don't know my Italian meats. Prosciutto?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I do know that one. I just haven't seen it spelled. So, yeah, what are you going to be doing today in honor of Trey Mancini? Having these Italian sandwiches like I did? What's that little, like, Italian soda that's always very popular? You ever see that at the grocery market?
I know not the Pellegrino.
No, it's like a soda. But Pellegrino's, I think, Italian, too. So what are you doing for Trey Mancini in honor of him?
Pizza.
Pizza's a great call. I don't know why that escaped me, but pizza's a great, great recommendation. 713-780 on ESPN.
Everybody, and boom, I heard Vanessa and Gallant trying to come up with the appropriate nickname. But Trey the Truth had been brought up, but he is a Houston rap.
He's already
legend.
Got a nickname. Yeah. Boom, boom.
I could see that one because like, of Ray the Boxer.
He like this came over with him. Like it was whenever he was young. It's not a creation. His nickname is Boom Boom.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And also Boomer. It used to be Boomer at the start, and then it got shortened to Boom Boom.
My dog's name is Boomer, and I can tell everybody I named my dog after Trey Mancini.
Or maybe Trey Mancini.
What about Trey Bien? Because that's another trademark of Trey the Truth. I don't know. And I said CV yes for Vasquez.
It's fine by me,
because,
sure.
Because Vasquez, look, I mean, underrated and all that yesterday, too, and especially because of how well Urquidy pitched. But he had to feel comfortable with his catcher if he was going to pitch the way he did, too. And he fit right in. He knew his old team.
Yeah.
He got to know his new pitcher. He did his job.
He did. He performed very well in that game yesterday. But what are you going to be doing in honor of Trey Mancini being a Houston Astro and showing off in his first start?
Someone's
going to
be sending us pizza
too.
Before the end of the show.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so. You never
Deep
know.
Fish.
I'm going to start doing my Italian accent that
Not
everybody
Detroit
loved.
Style.
Everybody
Please.
Loved the Italian accent. They really, really endured it. Or they really, really enjoyed it. You said the one thing that I wanted to talk about on the other side, too. Yesterday, to me, was a good example of how Vasquez, as the primary catcher, because we got into how the Astros can deploy Christian Vasquez, how much they're going to look back and forth at how much Maldonado and Vasquez are going to have a timeshare there. So I think it's something that you have to look at that. Also, but normally we don't take calls in our first segment, but we're asking you, the people, what are you going to do in honor of Trey Mancini, not only being a Houston Astro, but hitting a home run in his first start as a Houston Astro? For me, I grabbed the big Italian at Potbelly's. For Brendan, he's going to have some pizza today, even though he doesn't love the pizza scene in this city. All right, let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Vera, what are you going to do because of Trey Mancini?
So I'm not going to order any food, but I'm going to listen to some Henry Mancini on YouTube and order the other Mancini, honor the other Mancini. So that's my thank you to Trey Mancini for scoring his first run as an Astro and many more to come.
Very, very good. I did the same thing. Atex Hobo Girl yesterday put on Twitter some of his songs.
Pink
and I
Panther?
Went and listened to some of his songs. Actually, I didn't listen to Pink Panther.
The theme from the Pink Panther, I believe, is Henry Mancini.
Yeah. So, look, I did the same thing yesterday, Vera, on the way home after Trey Mancini hit the home
Brendan,
run.
Brendan, if that's true, we might already have music for Trey Mancini if the theme from the Pink Panther is Henry Mancini.
Yeah. What were you about to say after the...
Atex Hobo Girl's Dez.
Oh, okay.
That's her name.
Yeah, I know her as ATX Hobo Girl. 713-780-ESPN. What are you going to do in honor of Trey Mancini hitting a dong in his first at bat, in his first start as a Houston Astro? Also, you mentioned the Vasquez-Maldonado thing. I think yesterday was a good example of how Vasquez could be the primary catcher, but Maldonado's value is still important. Let's discuss when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. I've been telling you about him for quite a while since I had that NeoGraft procedure, and you can be the next in line to get one too. I'm telling you, it is the way to go. If you are trying to hang on to your hair and you feel like the only option is to shave it, it's not. And you don't need the sprays and creams and foams and those things that mask it. You got something that you can go to that can actually fix the problem. It's the NeoGraft procedure, and Doc Linville is the best in the business at doing it. And for you ESPN listeners, you can find out all the information for free. It normally costs $150 to have a consultation with Doc Linville's office. You get it for free as an ESPN listener. Just go to 975hair.com and check out the NeoGraft procedure. Set up an appointment. Ask all the questions like I did. I wanted to know how long the procedure lasted. I wanted to know the effective rate of all the follicles moved. Because, see, simply what they're doing is they're taking areas of your scalp where you always will have hair. And genetically, you will always have it in the sides and the back. And they will move it to where you need it, either the baboon's butt on the back up on top, or maybe your forehead has become an 8-head and you want your hairline back like I did. They move it, and then they basically tell you it's almost guaranteed 95%+ rate of the follicles moved, stay and grow and last and will be there. And that's what sold me. I did it. I could not be happier with it. You'll see the full results in 6 to 9 months, but immediately you'll see the follicles there, and they will be growing, and you will see them, and it will encourage you on a daily basis. Check them out for free. Just get that free consultation. Go to 975hair.com. Check out my friend Doc Linville.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Here's Mr. Mancini himself with his old Pink Panther. What are you doing in honor of Trey Mancini today after he hit a home run in his first start, in his first at-bat, in his first start
for the Astros? Hope it's not drooling pink taco.
What's that?
Hope it's not Googling Pink Taco for the Pink Panther for Mancini.
Isn't that a place over there on Westheimer? You can get some
if you need some street tacos. I'd Google it.
Anyways, it's me, Trey Mancini. Hit the home run in yesterday's game. I'm eating a big battalion. Vera is going to listen to some Mancini music today like we just did as our bump back.
What other Henry Mancini cuts were you
I can't remember the name of it. I can't remember the name of the song. I'm terrible at names.
Because he was more like, wasn't he more like for like instrumentals and movie themes and things?
To me, it was the one that I was listening to was instrumental, and it was kind of like romantic. You know what I mean? Kind of romantic. Pinche Pancho Villa says Yankees will be sleeping with the fishes in October. Mancini's going a little different with the Italian than we were going.
I think Bob Nightingale's playing all of us.
With what?
Because he tweets all the time about it. He's all so pro-Yankees and so all about the Yankees. And then he goes on with the wheelhouse and basically says that even during the Subway Series between the Mets and Yankees, they were still talking about the Astros as the Yankees and their fans.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you trolling? Are you just playing both sides,
Bobby?
He's
for real. He's for real. I mean, the Yankee fans, I think, are kind of like pessimists, right? Like, they're obnoxious and arrogant and loud.
I wouldn't say pessimists before I'd say a-holes, but...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of... adjectives that you can use to describe our friends D-bags, up in the New
you just
York.
Want to start with a letter.
Yeah, get the out of here. That's one of the strangest places in the world because we come from Houston, where we have like Southern hospitality for the most part. Everybody's very nice, and then like a term of endearment over there is get the out of here. You know,
I can visit there, and I used to have to go once a year.
Yep,
and then whenever we traveled there, I could never live there. Those the rudest, just obnoxious people on the planet.
Also, like. This just came to me. I went to Old Yankee Stadium whenever I was a kid. I was 8 years old. I got cussed out by a Yankee fan when I was 8 years old. So didn't really know what hockey was because, like, I lived in Houston. I'm not really, you know, introduced to the NHL. So we went to watch a Yankees. I can't remember who they were playing. But it was like Daryl Strawberry Yankees. I was 8 years old. It was 1996. And there was a guy sitting next to us that was wearing a blue shirt with red letters that said Rangers. So I go, oh, you're a Ranger fan. You must like the Texas Rangers. And I don't remember exactly like the way I said it, but I said, hey, you're a Texas Ranger fan. And he said, get the out of here, kid. This is a hockey shirt. I was like, oh, okay, very nice. That's my introduction to you New Yorkers. Not going to live here ever again.
You know, we used to, for NBA meetings, we used to travel there once a year. And it's like you would have the walk signal and go up and start walking in a crosswalk.
Yeah.
And a car would basically try to take out your ACLs and then roll down their window to MFU because you were keeping them from their destination. Dude. Though you had the walk signal. It was like the one time we got up, we landed at like 10 o'clock at night and we got like a van to take all the Rockets front office people to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And we're driving through New York and this car is in such a hurry that it comes so close to the van that it hits the side view mirror and the van like stops like to see what happened is are all of us all right. And the car jammed on the brakes, got out of the car, walked back. And our vice president of sales, a female, is in the passenger seat and he punches the window, gets back in his car and takes off. And it's like, so you were in a hurry. You took out the van and then because you didn't like how it went down, you went punched the window and then took off.
It's a strange place.
Oh, I can't stand it.
It's almost like a different country.
It's good to say you've been there and seen the sights and the key things.
Yeah.
But then that's it.
Don't go there for the hospitality.
No.
Don't go there for the hospitality. King of Twitches says, maybe I'll go to confession in honor of Mancini. Fabian says, I'm going to have a Perini in honor of Mancini. Is that I think that's the little soda. I think so. The Pellegrino is the water. It's like the sparkling water. Mm-hmm. But there's like a soda, Italian soda. I think that's what it is. I think it is the Peroni. Although I'm not Italian. I'm not 100%
Peroni
sure.
Sounds like a.
It sounds like a food,
an Italian
actually,
sandwich.
Right?
Yeah.
I like cannolis. You a cannoli guy?
No.
You don't like? Okay.
No.
How about you, Brendan? Brendan always has great food.
I love
takes.
Italian food, but.
They're not my favorite, but they're good.
I like cannolis. I'm a big cannoli guy.
They're solid.
Yeah. Anyway, 713-780.
Google Italian soda and see what comes up.
ESPN, 713-780-3776. 0754 is asking us, maybe Mancini will do mound visits. It's not a bad idea.
From left field?
He was playing first base yesterday.
Okay. Yeah.
Be tough to do it in first base. 8755, going to eat an Italian sub today at Subway, thanks to Trey Mancini. I think we should. 0441 says, I'll be getting my first colonoscopy in honor of Trey Mancini. How is that relevant?
I don't have any clue where that association lies, and I don't know that I want to know.
I don't know how that's relevant at all. 8755. Here's a nickname for Mancini. Trey the Godfather Mancini.
Okay.
You don't like that?
That's all right.
1264.
I think there's better out there. Somewhere.
1-2-6-4, I'm going to go do what Granato would do, a.k.a. Mr. Italian. Keep Texas chill and pound some cold, refreshing Coors Lights. That's from Charlie. All right, that's fine. 1-2-9-6, can y'all get some radio guys from New York to talk Yankees? The Wheelhouse did that yesterday with Bob Nightingale, spelled N-Y, didn't they?
I think they did. Yes, they did.
Oh, Peroni's an Italian beer. That's right. Oh. That's right. That sounds like a great idea. I might pick up some Peroni on the way home. 713-780-ESPN. So I wanted to say this, too. You mentioned up the Christian Vasquez aspect of this, because both of the offensive players the Texans or the Astros acquired at the deadline were in the lineup yesterday. Mancini homered. Vasquez, I don't believe, picked up a hit, but caught a very good game. But I think that's a good example of how you can deploy Vasquez as your primary catcher, 60-40 split, whatever you want to be, and how Maldonado's value is still important. Because Urquidy was talking after the game about how the game plan was still – we'll play it here. Urquidy talking about after the game about how Maldonado was still very impactful with the game plan.
We made the same plan like Maldonado. I mean, for sure he knows a little bit how more attack them, but in my case, I mean, I try to do the same routine, watch videos and try to study some hitters from over there, and I made my plan, and he got his plan too, and we worked together.
There you go. So, like, we give a lot of credit to Maldonado, I would argue rightfully so, for the way he can handle a pitching staff, see a pitcher through a game, and even if he's not the one sitting there pressing the buttons on the pitch comm to say which pitch I want you to throw, like, we shouldn't lose sight that part of the game plan is done pregame. And Maldonado, even if he's not in the lineup that day, is still going to be a huge factor in the pregame plan.
I don't think a lot of people realize kind of what we mentioned yesterday when talking about this, and that is just like in the NFL when you have a quarterback room. You have the pregame and the pre-series meeting rooms between the catchers and the pitcher and maybe some of the relief pitchers to go over the scouting reports on every hitter in a lineup. And I think that's what I said when we were talking about getting Vasquez acclimated, but to understand how Maldi's been doing it and to have Maldi be able to give him input on the games that he catches, to understand how they do it, what they look at, how they approach, and then maybe he can input and say, when we were in Boston, we looked at this guy and pitched him like this. Compare notes and see what works best. But I think that's the kind of spirit you want in that locker room, when we heard when Maldi was going to go pick him up. Yep. The fact that there's no animosity and they want to work together for the best interest of winning games for this team, it can only get better as they have more time together.
Look, I think it is going to be a timeshare. Just the fact that it's the catcher position, it's going to be a timeshare. The backup catcher plays more than most backup other positions around the diamond. You can make the case, super utility guy, Aledmys Diaz, he's going to play every five or seven days.
I think that's an actual stat, that backup catchers play more on a backup role than any other position.
Starting catchers only start like 120 games maximum for the entire year. They don't play every day for five games straight. You have to have an off day if you're a catcher. Now, you could have a super utility guy where it's, Joe McEwing back in the day, Aledmys Diaz, Marwin Gonzalez, that's going to play almost every day because they're giving other guys the day off. Now, the catcher position is going to need a lot of rest. So you're going to see Vasquez. You're going to see both Maldonado.
Great pull, by the way. Joe McEwing.
Super Joe McEwing.
Good call.
That's the first super utility player I remember was Super Joe.
Really?
Super Joe McEwing. I think he was the third base coach for somebody.
I think you're right, too.
Recently.
Yep.
But anyways, like, this is a great example of how you can utilize both of their strengths. Like, okay, do or die game, playoffs, you need Vasquez's bat in the lineup, but you don't want to lose the value of a Maldonado game plan. All right, Maldonado, you go set up the game plan with Vasquez in the room prior to the start. And I think yesterday was a good example of that with Jose Urquidy saying, yeah, look, Maldonado still very helpful, even though it was Vasquez behind the plate.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think that as long as all sides and all parties are okay with it, it's the perfect mix, because we always know that you make defensive replacements late in game, and that's where Maldi could really step up. But I think that offensively, it's just too good to pass up the opportunity to put another good bat in the lineup by putting Vasquez in there and realizing how much he can upgrade the entire lineup, and the fact that the catcher maybe doesn't even have to bat ninth. You can move him around because of the versatility there that we keep talking about, which was big at the deadline with the moves they made, is he's such a good bat, he doesn't have to bat ninth. You can move him up and down and around the lineup, but he's going to enhance your overall offensive production. And that's something that I don't think you can turn the other cheek to when you get to playoff baseball.
Dubon was in the nine hole yesterday, so to your point. A couple of our texters, thanks to the Hive, I couldn't put together why somebody said colonoscopy.
I got it now,
Yeah. Trey Mancini had colon cancer. That was the cancer that he beat, which we were aware of. I just didn't put two and two together in the spot. I just saw colonoscopy. I was like, why in the world are you talking about that? But thanks to the Hive for clearing that up. 713-780.
I got some other clear-ups for you.
ESPN.
So there's Pellegrini water. And then there's also a San Pellegrino.
That's what I'm thinking of.
San Pellegrino Blood Orange is an Italian soda.
That's the one I was thinking of, okay. The San Pellegrino. So it's the same word, it's just San in front of it? Or is it spelled slightly different?
Yeah, it's San Pellegrino is definitely the soda. And I get, and I think it looks like it's almost a different company that does the Pellegrino water.
Okay. 713-780-ESPN. What are you doing in honor of Trey Mancini hitting his first home run as a Houston Astro? We might have buried the lead in the first 30 minutes of this show. How much do you believe in Cy Urquidy? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Poncho says on Twitch, Mancini will be falling in love with the Crawford boxes. Will not take much to keep him here, I would think.
Well, so Chuck said after the season, before that, he said that he thought that Vasquez and Mancini will be running back to their old teams. And I said, not so fast. I said, I could see Vasquez, one, testing free agency, because I think that if anybody was a little scorned by the fact that a team that he felt like loved him, put him out there, it would be him. And I think that now he'll probably test his value. And I don't think he's going to be running to stay here either because of the reasons we talked about, platooning with Maldi. But I think that Mancini doesn't have to stop loving Baltimore to love winning and to love a ballpark and a clubhouse environment that wants him to be there, that he can excel at, and he can be the perfect replacement for two different positions. Just like we say versatility this year where he can play, he can replace Yuli, he can replace Brantley, he can do so many things for you, and if he does it at a good price, he's a great option to have on this team.
I would love to have Trey Mancini next 3-4 years or so. He's approaching his 30s, but the thing with I expect both of them to test their value and probably go to the top bidder. Like, that's the one thing. Like, Trey Mancini can love his time here. Christian Vasquez can love his time here. But if the Astros are going to pay either one of those guys $5 million and somebody's knocking on the door paying them $15 million, you can kiss them goodbye.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because what's your value? What do you think he's going to make on the open market?
Yeah, I just threw out those numbers for the sake of math.
Because if Brantley's making 16 or 17.
I think Mancini's probably going to get somewhere between per year average annual value. I would say somewhere between 12 to 18. I know that's a big
gap.
I was thinking in
and around 12 plus.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, it depends on who he replaces. You got to bargain with Yuli.
Well, I mean, it's not who he replaces. It's what the value. It's what the market's saying.
Sure.
It's what the free agency market is. I'm saying
from an Astros perspective, if you can get him for, you know, where you were paying Yuli or where you were paying Brantley, depending on what you're thinking about the rest of the lineup, you could get him and it could make sense.
This is why I didn't want to pay Jake Odorizzi $7.8 million next year, by the way, because you're going to need a Trey Mancini at either left or first base. Even if it's not Mancini, you're going to need left field. You're going to need first base. You're going to want to pay Verlander. And yeah, $7.8 might look like peanuts, but when the Astros use the competitive balance tax as their salary cap, every million matters. Now, Mancini, to me, it's not so much about the yearly value. To me, it's more about the length, kind of like the Correa. So if I can get him somewhere between the 12-18 range, great, whatever. But for me, it's probably not longer than 3-4 years. Now, Christian Vasquez, I really think that Vasquez is not going to be an Astro longer than this year because they already have Maldonado under contract, and I think that they probably envision Corey Lee as one of the two catchers on this team next year.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think Mancini is the more viable and probably realistic guy to stick around and play here. And I think when you look at it and you think about it too, I think the one thing that people aren't thinking enough about too is, as much as you like Mancini, and early on the returns are he likes it here and it could work, even if it doesn't work with him, to your point of why you needed that money from Odorizzi, look, Josh Bell's a guy that doesn't have to stay in San Diego. Josh Bell's a Texas kid that said he'd love to play in Texas. Now, you're probably going to have to pay more to get a Josh Bell, a switch-hitting younger first baseman that's got a ton of pop. But if he doesn't like playing in the Hollywood Stars of all of the lineup that they have in San Diego, and they don't want to pay him because they're paying such big money to all the other guys they have in their lineup, that he could possibly be a guy you could be in competition to get too, because of the fact that you got Odorizzi off the books, because you have money to play with that you might not have otherwise had if you had it tied up.
There's actually quite a few first basemen that are going to be free agents this year, assuming they don't sign a contract between now and then. That there's three that jump out to me that I really like. You mentioned two of them, Trey Mancini, Josh Bell. The other one's Jose Abreu. Now, Abreu's older, but the dude still slugs
the baseball.
He and Altuve
are buddies, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, now you're looking at Abreu. You could probably get him on a bigger deal, shorter term. So those are the three first basemen that we look way too far ahead at the offseason that I would be a big fan of. Fabian asking us on the Twitch, Jackie Bradley Jr. got DFA'd today. Are you interested? Nope, absolutely not. 210 hitter this year, 228 his career. The dude can't hit. And you already have one of those guys in center field. You already have Jake Myers, who plays a pretty good center field, cannot hit. Why would you bring in Jackie Bradley? I don't think Jackie Bradley's one of the 20. Like, if you had Jackie Bradley right now for free, I don't think he makes this roster right now.
Yeah, I don't either. I will say this, though. Having watched him, and he was in Boston this year, and I watched some of his games. He was in Milwaukee prior to that. One thing no one's ever going to criticize him for, he plays a great defensive outfield. Mm-hmm. And he is sneaky quick. He's got a good arm. He does a lot of things well defensively. But essentially, it's like if you put him out there in this Astros lineup, it's like taking if Maldi's not your catcher and Vasquez is, and you upgraded the bat, you just put Maldi's bat in center field.
Yeah, it's pretty much an equivalent of Jose Siri. Like, the dude can't hit, but even Siri's got the pop, whereas
had a hit yesterday.
Jackie Bradley doesn't. I think he's 1-for-7 in his first 7 Tampa Bay at bat. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to the Arcidi stuff in a moment. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, though. Chris, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, what's up, Bees? Hey, have you guys, heard from Maldonado's mouth that he wants to continue playing a majority of the starts? He's 35 years old. I see maybe a possibility, guys, where he's wanting to transition into more of a player's coach, I mean, everyone saw the powwow he had in New York. That's something a coach does. So I just wanted to put that possibility out there that maybe, he's wanting to kind of take more days off and be more into the coaching aspect of things.
Appreciate the call, Chris. Look, I think that it's a realist. It's realistic to at least consider that option. Never has a veteran player said, I want to be replaced in the lineup and go to second string or, be delegated to, splitting time. It's the other way around almost every single time. They want to hang on to their spot. They know that they got the organization is looking at guys that are heir apparents to replace them. And we see movies and stories and everybody talk about the fact that your day is coming, but you just try and fight it tooth and nail. I don't think Maldi's trying to give up his starting spot anytime soon, particularly for this season. This season, he has put such a stamp on this entire ball club. But, of course, all the different accomplishments this pitching staff has done and how much credit he's gotten for it. I don't think he wants to step back this season. And I honestly think it's going to be a pretty lengthy conversation to figure out if he gets all the different things that he's about to get to and he gets a contract for next year, figure out what he's going to do next year. If he's okay platooning, that's a conversation they have to have.
Yeah, I have to Chris's point, no, I haven't heard from Maldonado's mouth
neither.
He's like wants to be the everyday starter. But, I mean, he's a competitor, right? He probably wants to be the everyday starter. But then to talk out of the other side of my mouth, the dude's like the ultimate teammate and has been a backup catcher in the past. So I think he's to the point in his career where he's probably cool with a pretty close to 50-50 work share, whether it's he's getting 60%, whether it's Vasquez getting 60%. I think Maldonado's good with it. And I also think Maldonado is really cool with the idea that he's going to pick up his vesting option of, I think it's $5.5 million for next year if he starts like 12 more games. So he's going to get another year extended with a place that he likes to be for a significant amount of money. Now, in terms of him being the starter, even in 2023, I really don't think he's going to be. I think he is going to transition to that backup catcher role where he's going to play 30% of the time, 40% of the time. If it's backing up Corey Lee, if it's backing up some other free agent, I don't think Martin Maldonado is your everyday starter really at the start of next year. And I could even, like to the conversation we were having yesterday, I could see by the time September rolls around that he's really your majority backup catcher.
Yeah, look, again, a lot of this is just ego-driven. It's ego-driven and individual player-driven. We can read body language and hear in the quotes. Vasquez wasn't too geeked up about the fact that he wasn't going to play, a lot of games.
He seemed to be more sad about leaving Boston than his situation.
Yeah, I think he was still in shock. I mean, we can say one thing about how the media attacked him and got the word almost as quick as he did on the field. But then after that, to digest, this is the only franchise that I've ever played for. It's the only franchise that I've ever felt like I'm, you know, that I, in his mind, I'm sure he thought about, I'm never leaving here unless it's my choice. And then all of a sudden to have the rug pulled out from under you the way they did it and how abruptly it happened, he's still in shock. So, of course, then when they throw him in front of the media, aside from Mark Berman and everybody hounding him after batting practice, as much as he wants to say the right thing so as to not piss anybody off on his new team, he's still feeling a lot of remorse and a lot of tough love feelings about leaving the team, the only team he's ever known.
Yeah, I think I'll be honest with you. I think he's heartbroken leaving the Boston Red Sox, which, I mean, okay, he's loyal. He's loyal
you
to
saw
his team.
Even yesterday, but out on the field, giving hugs and going over all the Red Sox players even more. I mean, that was a tough divorce for him.
It'll be fine, though. The only thing to cure a broken heart is time.
You know what
and
it
we,
is?
We still have time.
It's a road trip.
Yeah,
now he's away from the Red
Sox.
He's on the road. He's going to be fine.
I had the same exact thought. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. Okay, Cy Urquidy. How much do you believe in Cy Urquidy? How far are you willing to go with Cy Urquidy? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cy Urquidy at it again. We've been all over this one too, Blankers. Jose Urquidy ditching his cutter. I think he did it, what was it, June 8th, I believe, final game where he threw his cutter. Why are you looking at us, silly Brendan? Brendan's looking at us funny. But anyways.
I mean, we are Geppetto, okay?
Yeah.
We pull the strings on the puppets that make things happen, whether it's playing Dido.
Yeah.
Or doing what we need to do to jumpstart people, like getting rid of a cutter.
We did something that Brendan didn't like, and he gave us the side eye. And this is just another classic example.
With the head shake. Don't forget that.
We are his puppets.
The side eye with the head shake.
Anyways, Jose Urquidy, since ditching the cutter, has turned into his alter ego, Cy Urquidy. Cy or is he's gone. He's in Atlanta. The Astros have a new Cy Young candidate, Cy Urquidy. I'm kidding. But anyways, nine straight starts for Jose Urquidy.
Wins. He's got more wins than Garrett Cole, by the way, people.
You know why he wins games? Because he goes deep into games. And that's a huge luxury that Jose Urquidy brings to the table. Nine straight quality starts since ditching his cutter. In those nine starts, 5-1, 2.29 ERA. Opponents are hitting 156 against him. So, like, oh, I wish the Astros would have traded for Josh Bell instead of Trey Mancini. I'd rather have Trey Mancini and Jose Urquidy than Josh Bell. I'm sorry.
Well, early returns, as we looked at it, I think that it's pretty easy to go that route. Because I think the more that I look at this, too, The fact that, to me, Garcia, we were stacking them before the trade deadline. Which would you keep and who would you get rid of? And Javier was basically off the table to us, and we were talking about Urquidy being the odd man out. I'm not so sure Garcia's not the odd man out now.
That's where I was going to ask, too, now. Because, okay, Urquidy's been great. Urquidy looks outstanding. We just mentioned the numbers since ditching the cutter. He is a totally different pitcher. He has World Series success in his career as well. I'm willing to go as far to say right now, with the information I have currently on August 4th, that if the playoffs were starting tomorrow, Jose Urquidy would be my number three starter behind Justin Verlander and Framber Valdez.
Where does Lance McCullers?
Lance McCullers right now is in Sugar Land. I'm saying if the playoffs start tomorrow, Cy Urquidy is my number three starter.
It's weird to hear you say that, right? Because of how we've talked all year long about Javier, about different guys that would be basically, 1, 2, 3, cut and dried, and then we'll worry about four.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't argue with you in terms of what his recent performances have been and the fact that the numbers don't lie and that you want that kind of success against whoever you're playing in the playoffs. And he's been mowing through, unlike Odorizzi when we said, well, he had three starts against the A's, right? He's been, no matter who he faces, he has been good with swing and miss. He has been great about, like you said, getting deep into games. He has been really good about not getting caught with a crooked number in a really big inning and really just kind of minimizing whatever damage when he does get into situations where he has some trouble. It's hard for me to argue that. I mean, I would think that the only other viable option would be if you think Javier still has enough of that swing and miss stuff that you would say, I could see Javier 3 and Urquidy 4. Regardless of which way you go, you've got four really good options, and Lance McCullers hasn't factored in yet.
See, the sample size for Urquidy, too, is large. Like, this is nine starts. This is over almost 2 months of turns in the rotation. Javier, look, I still love Christian Javier, so it's not like a knock on Christian Javier. But when Javier, when we were talking about him as like a future all-star in the starting rotation and has, you know, strikeouts per nine more than, you know, just about anybody in all of Major League Baseball, that was really over like a short sample. And he's come back to earth a little bit, but had a really good start the other day against Boston to where you really still like Javier. Huge fan of Javier. Like, this, it's not a knock on Javier at all. But the fact that Urquidy's reliable, he's consistent, he pitches you deep into games, and sometimes Javier can be volatile. Sometimes you have the 13 strikeout, no hit performance against New York, and then you have another start where he gets through four, he gives up three or four runs, and it's, you know, very, very, you know, a lot of ebbs and flows with Javier.
Here's
starting.
Another V word for you, too, that we've used with the trades. He's also versatile. Of the the guys we're talking about, his versatility means you can easily transition him back to the bullpen, and he's had experience doing it and being successful doing it to where you look for what's going to better my team for this year. It's the same way if Hunter Brown gets into this equation, it's going to be as a relief pitcher, whether he's done it or not. Yeah. It's just, can he be a relief pitcher? You know Javier has done both. You know that he has succeeded at both. So if it's an easier transition to put Javier in the bullpen and your bullpen's stronger because you really didn't do a whole lot other than Will Smith,
which is
at the deadline. Right, and you don't know how good you did there except for he's left-handed.
Yeah.
You look at it and say, if my bullpen's better and I don't really miss to take a step back with who I replace Javier in the rotation with,
right,
then that's the best move for my baseball team this year, regardless of what individually they want to do or they should do.
It's a way to get an arm to your bullpen, right? Like, you wanted the arm, and maybe it didn't come via the trade like you wanted, but right, a roundabout way to get to it to where now you're adding one of the best swing and miss pitchers in all of baseball in Christian Javier to a bullpen, makes you a little bit more of a weapon that way, too. Now, let's throw in the Lance McCullers part of this equation, too. So, like, okay, like, willing to go as high as number three, high as number four for Jose Urquidy. To be quite frank, it doesn't really matter if you're three or you're four. Once you get to the playoffs, if you're not pitching in the wild card series, which we don't think the Astros are, you get to the division series, you get to a league series, you get to a World Series with the best of five, best of seven, best of seven, you're more than likely, unless you're pitching somebody on short rest, which I would not advise you to do. We saw what happened to Lance McCullers when you did that. You need the four-man rotation. Yep. So even if Urquidy slides down to four because you're getting back a healthy and capable and able Lance McCullers, I'm not bumping Cy Urquidy from my playoff rotation.
No, right now it would see he would be the leader in the clubhouse, so it would seem, just based on the recent results and the fact that, like I said, versatility-wise, it makes a whole hell of a lot of sense to put Javier back where he's been in the past and been very successful in the playoffs, which is big because it's a different animal than the regular season. Mm-hmm. And then just figure out how Garcia can be a long relief guy for you. See, or
I know Garcia hasn't done this a whole lot, but could you imagine the potential that Garcia has, letting it unload, emptying the tank for mm-hmm. one inning? I think he could be nasty in that
role.
He
really could.
Now, we haven't seen it.
But he has strikeout. He has a strikeout pitch.
He can get it up to 97 mm-hmm. as a starter. So you let him empty the tank in one inning? I think he could get it up to 98, 99.
That's something I also don't think a lot of people realize. People don't realize the fact that as a starter, you're never really trying to reach back and give it everything you got because you know you have to have longevity. Like we talked about with Urquidy, the fact that he gets in the sixth and seventh inning. Part of that is because he's actually measuring his pitches to the point where he's not going to. But when they say empty the tank, mm-hmm. that's exactly what it means. It means that's why you see pitchers huffing and puffing. Everybody's like, it's a pitcher. Why is he sweating so profusely and huffing and puffing? Well, because when you empty the tank and bring everything you've got, you are literally exhausting yourself. But if you do that because you only have to face three batters or one inning or throw 20 pitches or less, and he can actually ramp up the fastball but still has a strikeout pitch in his back pocket, yeah, he could be effective.
Remember, we saw that with Verlander the other day against Seattle yep. out of the All-Star break, whenever he got that jam. I think it was in the seventh or eighth.
He hit 99, what, two or three times?
Yeah. Yeah, he talked about how he emptied the tank to get out of that inning. And he was sitting 95, 96 pretty much that whole game. He did have a little bit of an uptick of velocity.
I think he hit 97 once or twice.
Yeah, he was throwing hard that game compared to like his season average. But he talked about in that inning, he got in that spot. I think it was second and third, one out, no out, something like that. And he said, I'm going to empty the tank here. I need to get out of this inning. This is when I need to do it. And he got it up to 99. He said he was peeking at the gun in the stadium thinking that he could get it up to 100. So, like, starters have an extra mile or two, sure, maybe three. So I would love to see Luis Garcia. Like, I don't want to see him in the regular season because he's so valuable as a starter. But I think he has huge potential as a one-inning guy if you get into the playoffs there.
I'll tell you the one thing that the Astros would be leery of is the fact that if you get a guy to transition to doing that and then doing it that way, mm-hmm. now for a team that has been hyper sensitive to how many innings he pitches.
Yeah.
That's some wear and tear on your arm.
Now, I'm throwing the rules out of the book. I'm throwing the rules out whenever it comes to the playoffs, though. Like, if I'm getting to the playoffs and I have a shot to win the World Series, I'm not worried about limiting the arms of, like, Luis Garcia, some of the young guys. Like, remember the Nats made the playoffs and they didn't use Strasburg. Yep. And it's like, what are you doing here? Like, this is why you play. You play to get to the postseason. But that's kind of the benefit of the six-man rotation. You're limiting their innings in the regular season. That way you can unload in the postseason. Mr. Brostash on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, says Javi would be the perfect upgrade for our bullpen come playoff time. People forget we're going to drop down to a four-man rotation come playoff time, so we're about to add two solid arms, more than likely Javi Garcia, to an already good bullpen. Like, that's the other part, is like how you deploy them in the postseason, because you have a back end of the bullpen that's pretty good right now.
I'm cringing at the first part of that statement. Adding two quality good arms. Okay, I believe one of them, I'm on record as saying, I'm not going to believe it till I see it, if you're referring to Lance McCullers Jr.
Sure.
But he mentioned, so you are
making an assumption there, and you're jumping to the conclusion that Lance is back, which I see your point. Let's see it before we jump to that conclusion. But if it is Javi and Garcia going to the bullpen, I mean,
your bullpen got better.
Those are two arms that matter. Yeah, they're quality arms.
That would explain in a lot of ways why James Click wasn't hyper-focused on trying to add more to the bullpen.
I think James Click flat out said this. Like, if you were watching the broadcast, it was 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was after the deadline, so it was the night of the deadline. The Astros played after the deadline.
No, I think it was the next night that they got him in.
I think it was August 2nd, the night of August 2nd, I believe. I could be wrong. But anyways, they were talking to him, and they mentioned the ideas of, you know, like, basically they got him going about how you're building this team, what you're doing. And he said, look, we have a luxury of having a big lead in the American League West, where we have the luxury of being able to look at how our team is going to look like in October. To me, that's one of the two reasons you traded Jake Odorizzi, is because you know when you're in the playoffs, his role is going to be very limited at best. And then two, the contract number he carried in 2023. Like, he does nothing for you in the playoffs, and he might have negative value for you in 2023. Where Will Smith might have zero value, but at least it's not negative value. But then all the other moves too, like not trading for a bullpen arm. I think that they tried to, but they just didn't. They fell short of that. Mm-hmm. But they also weren't desperate to do it because the bullpen numbers are good. And like you mentioned, you throw a Javier and a Garcia into a bullpen that's already solid. I mean, that's a pretty good luxury for Dusty
Baker.
Dusty managing, it's something, another topic of conversation.
Don't shortchange the D-bag factor, too.
The D-bag factor?
Yeah, the fact that Jake can be a D-bag and he can be a complete a-hole whiny baby. And we talked about how special the relationship is in the clubhouse. What the last thing they needed was a guy that was bitching and whining if he didn't get to be one of those starters. If he didn't get the extra starts because they were looking to get Lance back into the rotation, and him saying, look, my resume and what I've done recently is good enough for me. I don't know why they're not pitching me. I don't want Mark Berman. I don't know why they're not doing it. I'm ready to go. I think that factored in too. When I kept saying addition by subtraction, that was one of those things where the last thing they needed to do was be distracted by Jake having a fit when they knew that they had enough quality pitching to do what they needed to do, whether he was involved or not. And like you said, and the last thing they needed to do was have that salary lingering around for another season.
Now, teammates would say that Odorizzi was a good teammate.
Oh, absolutely.
But the way that he would, I want to start, don't want to be a reliever, you know, it didn't always seem like he had the best interest in team, even though he was a good teammate.
He got into it with Dusty in the past. He addressed it after he was traded, the fact that, you know, they finally talked it out, but that, you know, and that Dusty's a Hall of Famer. But he also didn't run from the fact they had their issues. And he, again, was not a guy to kind of sit on his hands and just be a good team player. It was about what's best for Jake. And that's fine if you're playing on a middle-of-the-road team or the Cincinnati Reds or something like that. It's a little different when you're playing with a team that's as tight-knit as this team is trying to win a World Series.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Football is back starting tonight. Hall of Fame game. What are moments in your life? It could be sports. It could be otherwise. That you get excited for that most people don't. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.